challenges of the SDGs are and what can be done to make the world a better place.
So fundamentally, we promised way too much. We literally promised everything to everyone. And not surprisingly, we can't actually deliver on all of those promises. So we promised that we were going to fix hunger and malnutrition and poverty and disease, education, climate change, corruption, war, and everything else in between, along with, you know, organic apples and community gardens, all of which is nice. But of course, if you promise everything, you have no priorities. And so what I'm trying to say is we're now at halftime for the SDGs, and we're nowhere near halfway. If we're going to do better in the next part of the process, we really have to start thinking about what should we do first.
You wrote a book about how to resolve a lot of world problems, but how can we make sure we do better for the second half of this period? And if we cannot reach all 169 targets, in your estimation, how should we prioritize? What is the way forward here?
So at the end of the day, this is a political conversation. So politicians have to be honest and say, we can't do everything, and then let's do some things first. But you're asking me, and that's also what I wrote in the book, we work with more than 100 of the world's best economists, several Nobel laureates, to try to find out where can you get the most value for money. So basically, where can you spend an extra cedi or shilling or rupee or, you know, dollar or whatever your currency is and do the most good for that money? That's the real question that we're trying to answer, because what that means is no matter how much money you have, you will make sure you get value for money, that you actually achieve as much as you can for the SDGs. And so what we have identified are 12 amazing things that can deliver a lot, but by no means all, but a lot of the SDGs, a lot of our promises.
Talking about investments, what are the best investments to make the world a better place based on the data that you have?
So we identified 12 great things. So let me just give you a few examples. So a lot of both mothers and newborns die around birth, and we know how to deal with a lot of this. It's mostly about getting more women to give birth in facilities, but also to make sure that those facilities are actually well-staffed and that they have basic emergency obstetric care. So this will cost in the order of $5 billion a year, but we estimate this will actually mean that you can save 166,000 moms each year, and you can save 1.2 million children each and every year. Just to give you one example, one of the things that hospitals and institutions should have is a little resuscitator, basically air pump. So when the child is born, about 5% of all children don't breathe when they first get born, and they need to get a resuscitator, basically get a little bit of air into their lungs, and then they get going. That's just one of the great things we should do. We should also look at tuberculosis. We should also look at education, for instance. As you well know, education is a huge challenge everywhere, but perhaps especially so in the poor half of the world. We know that there's about 1/3 of a billion children in primary school in the poor half of the world, and many of them are not learning very much. One way to achieve that is to make sure that they all get taught at their own level. Remember, if you have 50 kids in a class, they're all 12 years old, but they're widely different in their abilities. Some of these kids are far ahead. A lot of these kids have no clue what's going on. One teacher just can't teach all of them at their particular level.
Now, Mr. Lomberg, the SDGs, as you are aware, have a global focus, but each country reasonably has different preconditions and specific challenges. Now, can your approach be tailored, measured to regional or national level to make sure each country gets the best possible results to resolve their specific challenges?
That's a great question. So yes, absolutely. So we've done a global analysis where you can spend money globally and achieve the most for the SDGs. But as you rightly point out, Every country is unique and every country has its own conversations about what should be their priorities. And so we actually work with a number of different governments in Africa and elsewhere to talk about what should your particular country do. So we work with Ghana, we work with Uganda, we're working with Namibia and Eswatini, and we're in the process of talking to several more, where we take a look at what are the plans for spending in the next couple of years. And then we try to say, with economics, what do we know works very well and what do we know works less well? So essentially, if you imagine, if you have politicians' wish list of 50 things they would like to do, we score them and show these things are dark green, these are incredibly good, these things are pretty good, they get a yellow, and some things are actually dumb, they get a red. And so we hope to help make both bureaucracies and politicians prioritize more of the really good ones.
John Lomberg is the president of the Copenhagen Consensus Think Tank. He spoke with me from the Swedish capital, Stockholm.
Global temperatures heading towards alarming highs and extreme weather. How is the weather in your country? Call us on WhatsApp and let us know how you're coping with the change of weather norms. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Juna, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs and Music from African Collection. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter. Good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Nigeria's female basketball team, the Tigress, have defeated Senegal to win the 2023 FIBA Women's Afro Basket Championship for the fourth consecutive time. Nigeria became the first team to win four FIBA Women's Afro Basket titles in a row over the last four decades, thanks to an 84-74 win over Senegal on Saturday in Kigali, Rwanda. Prior to Nigeria, Senegal was the last team to win four African titles in the 1970s. The Tigres' sixth continental title came exactly 20 years after they conquered their very first African crown in 2003 in Maputo, Mozambique. The victory means the Tigres will now compete for a spot at the women's basketball event of the 2024 Olympics. For their part, the Lionesses have now lost to the Tigres in four AfroBasket finals, 2005, 2017, 2019, and 2023. For newly appointed the Tigress head coach Rena Wakama, she becomes the first woman to lead a team to the AfroBasket title.
It's really not about me, okay? They came together and got this thing done, okay? I was just, you know, the leader telling them what to do, but they were out there performing and leaving it all out there for me. I think it was Mozambique when we went down, I think 10 or 12. Okay. The look in my girls' eyes, like, they told me they weren't going to lose. So I knew what type of team I had when we were down Mozambique and we came back to win. So that was a defining moment for me.
From the Afro Basket to the Women's World Cup, co-hosted by New Zealand and Australia, a courageous performance by South Africa's national women's team, Banyana Banyana, was not enough to overcome the Netherlands as the European side won 2-0 to advance to the World Cup quarterfinals on Sunday. The Dutch team showcased their prowess on the field with goals from Jill Rod and Lynette Bezentin, overcoming a spirited Banyana Banyana side. Despite being the underdogs, South Africa took the game to the Dutch in an entertaining last 16 clash at the Sydney Stadium in Sydney, Australia on Sunday. And on to athletics, where the 9th Francophone Games, which began on July 28th, will come to a close on Sunday, August the 6th. Over 3,000 athletes from 37 countries are participating in the games being hosted in Kinshasa, Congo DR's capital. Ziana Mina, head of the International Committee of the 9th Francophone Games, said despite
all the difficulties, concerns and uncertainties surrounding the games, it turned out to be very successful. In boxing news, the heavyweight boxing rematch between British Nigerian boxer Anthony Joshua and Dillian White has been cancelled after White returned an adverse finding to a random doping test. The rematch was scheduled to hold on Saturday, August 12th at London's O2 Arena. Joshua's promoters, Matchroom, are looking for a replacement opponent to meet him at the same location on the same day. And that's all for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospects in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. On this momentous day, large numbers of concerned Africans are monitoring with anxiety developments that may or may not occur at the brief timeline given by ECOWAS to the coup makers in Niger. The request is that within that period, they should reinstall the legally elected president and then may go back to their barracks. As we know, the head of the military group removed the president has been very defiant. He had made it clear that they would not comply with the request of ECOWAS. Apart from that, we have also heard from at least 4 or 5 ECOWAS members who have denounced any use of force by ECOWAS against Niger. Also, outside of the sub-region, other Africans, members of the African Union, have also strongly objected to the use of force in Niger. During the course of this week, the brief timeline, we have also seen serious developments. Many who have attempted to help in resolving the issue peacefully, the last of which is a mission, and the head of the junta even did not meet with the team. Also during this brief period, all European civilians residing in Niger have been removed from arm's way and flown out of the country. So in a sense, only the Nigerian civilians are now exposed in arm's way should there be clash of arms. We are also aware that right now, residents in Niger are over 2,500 troops from France and the United States. Last Friday, the junta requested the immediate removal of French troops from Niger, and the government of France rejected that, saying that only the duly elected president could give such an order. Africans were also alarmed in a way by the hint by ECOWAS a no-flow zone is being installed in Niger. Their concern rose out of the memory that it was the use and misuse of a Security Council no-fly zone over Libya with the admonition that there should be no boots on the ground that resulted in chaos in Libya, which still continues, and also the ultimate death of the head of state, Gaddafi, after which the floodgates were opened, and we have seen the flow of arms and ammunition with the rebels to the south. And that happened that the first victim was Mali, when the ancient city of Timbuktu was sacked and many valuable literature were destroyed. So any reference to no-fly zone is a red flag to many Africans. Who is there to tell what would happen in a situation where you have such confrontations? At least 2 members of ECOWAS, Mali and Burkina Faso, have said any use of force by ECOWAS would be seen as a declaration of war on them, and that therefore they would be obliged to intervene in Niger in its defense. So we are dealing with a very serious situation. But we should also remember that when ECOWAS first went into the business of peacekeeping, it was never conceived as an enforcement military force. ECOMOG was created within the compass of the Chapter 8 of the Charter of the United Nations dealing with regional arrangements. For all Africans, as you watch this day, hoping perhaps that people will stop at the brink, because when ECOWAS has used peacekeeping as in Liberia to begin with, it did not go there to initiate violence. It went to remove violence, the slaughtering of ethnic groups in the streets and even in the churches. Similarly, in Sierra Leone, ECOWAS did not go there to start violence. It went to stop violence. So it will be sad indeed if, in the case of Niger, that armed use by ECOWAS could really result in bloodbath. So still appeals should be made that people should be very, very, very careful. Three things now stand out. The first is this. Any selective outrage at coups in Africa is not a recipe for enhancing confidence in institutions, states, or group of states. Secondly, should there be bloodbath in Niger, Africans will be obliged to ask whose nutshells are being removed from the fire by ECOWAS. Second view is that one should be mindful that those who start a war never know how it will end. I thank you.
That was one man's point of view, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent.
She's a good belly dancer. The way you white girl, you look so romantic. Like the way you bake it. The way you white girl, you got me confessing. Oh yeah, yeah. Wait to be on air. Flowers, be anything you want.
Who, yeah, or die, who, die, who. by the end of the night. Enter bathroom and shop.
Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Peters, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, if the tree does not know how to dance, the wind will teach it. I'm your host, Peter Clotte in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
The way you're smiling, y'all about the breath.